This is a special weekend bonus episode of The Business of Tech. This episode is an interview with Kyle Hensloven with Huntress Labs. So why do we care? Because to judge a company's security expertise, it's important to know what the procedures are and how security researchers work. Let's learn more.
So Kyle Hensloven, I'm the CEO, or sometimes I feel like a little bit of chief janitor here at Huntress, helping clean up whatever's going down. And my background is offensive cybersecurity. I cut my teeth at NSA, and for the last 4 years, I've been blessed to be part of the MSP community, kind of using my offensive skills for defense.
There's been a number of issues that have come out recently, and I just want to give some people some context and understanding of this world so that they can judge what's going on. So I'm going to ask a really basic question. Walk me through the way a security vulnerability is reported.
Ooh, so this is a super cool question, because there's probably a lot of people that are affected by these vulnerabilities but never know, like, under the hood what's going on. So in your typical vulnerability, think of like the major companies are always the ones that's easiest to imagine. Reporting to Microsoft, reporting to Adobe, usually starts with some sort of researcher found a bug or believes they found a bug. So there's typically a well-established security at, maybe there's even a form online to submit your bug. And that kicks off the beginning of the vulnerability disclosure process, right? It's just the basic communication. And what everybody on that side of the house is looking for is, as a researcher, you're just expecting real quick to get a heads up. Have you seen this? Acknowledge you've read the thing and let me know that you're going to do something about it, because there's nothing more frustrating than when you find something. Bug bounty folks usually are doing for one of two things. They're doing it to be altruistic. They're believing benefiting a product, or maybe they're doing it for a little bit of cash. And those are both, reasonable things if you're putting your time and money into it. And the expectation generally there is, we have seen it. And this is the assigned maybe case manager. This is who's going to be your person walking through, and maybe setting some basic terms like disclosure guidelines. Different companies have different ways that they want to process things.
The one big thing that's thematically come out that I think is worth talking about is when you're coming with something, it seems like there's two different kinds, being delivered with a proof of concept and without. What's the difference between the two?
Yeah, so in the if you look at the early days of the internet, we're talking like as hackers started to be called what we now call hackers, we're talking bulletin board systems, et cetera. There used to be a mentality of, when I have a proof of concept, I'm just going to full disclosure. Everybody needs to know because everybody needs to defend. But it wasn't long before people realized sometimes when you go full disclosure, well, yes, you get the transparency, but you might put other people at risk. It would be similar if there was a situation like a car seat or something of that nature, where you didn't want to cause mass panic and people stop using car seats just because one car seat had an issue. You want to do the recall successfully. Right. And so nowadays, when we're talking about responsible disclosure, which is this coordination, I'm going to disclose this to you, it can come in generally two flavors. Some are, I won't say egregious, but I'll say sometimes they're very vague, high level. This is what I think is going on. I think I caused this to happen, but it's almost sometimes a handshake between the company and the researcher to help jointly figure out, is this truly a bug? Is this within the security boundary that we even care about? Because sometimes one person's view of a bug and a company's official policy, Microsoft is most notable for this. Sometimes Microsoft just says, look, I agree it's an issue, but it's outside of our accepted security boundary. We're not touching it. We're not servicing it. But that's a very mature policy. So what I'm getting at is sometimes there might not even be a proof of concept to prove this is a vulnerability and demonstrate what the issue is.
What would you expect a company to do if there isn't a proof of concept?
So every major bug bounty program, whether it's HackerOne or BugCrowd or even the big companies that run their own bug bounty programs, usually have a guidelines or standards of ethics. And part of those standards of ethics usually has expectation of certain clarity. So accurately describing risk, accurately providing steps to reproduce. Because I can tell you firsthand, I've actually reported bugs without a full proof of concept because maybe I was able to verbally describe it well enough to the point that the company could reproduce it with sufficient talent. And the reason for it is sometimes it takes, a lot of effort to get to what we call a POC, or this proof of concept. And this has become instilled so much in the hacker community that a POC is so valuable. There's actually articles online or a magazine online that's called POC or GTFO. And you can imagine what GTFO stands for, because right, they believe the proof of concept is so important. I can say I've been on both sides. Sometimes I haven't given as much information as I could, but those are largely when it's like, I don't have time. I'm doing this out of the kindness of my heart. I'm not getting paid. So you can imagine bug bounty programs sometimes encourage people to provide better proof of concept because that might actually qualify you for a better bug. I think you and I were BSing maybe a little bit before this too of, you know, what happens when you get a no POC. Like, think about all the stuff you are as a software developer. You might have significant effort to be able to figure out, how do I even reproduce this? Is this BS? I can tell you, even on Huntress, there's a lot of like sometimes really motivated people that are just trying to look over our software and like, Kyle, I think there's a bug. And we're like, that's just intended functionality. So you don't want to waste time. But you could imagine there's this like trade-off of, how much time do I put effort into making sure this truly is a bug versus validating it? And sometimes if you get that wrong, the results can kind of be horrendous.
Right. So there is a big difference then between something that's delivered with a proof of concept versus something without. There's a big difference in the way the expectations of a response.
Yeah. And if you look at the world's best research teams that are doing vulnerabilities, whether they're selling it to like governments or whether they're giving them away for free, like Google's Project Zero, you know, a team focused on creating 0 days in critical software. I mean, every single one of the proof of concepts that you can go out right now, you could search Project Zero and find the repo. When those become public after this like embargo period, you'll find proof of concepts on almost every, if not every single bug. The reason for it is, if you truly want a vendor to be able to fix it, sometimes you got to go above and beyond. And you can see Google, they've chose it to be a loss leader, but they're going to put great hackers there to write these good POCs because they believe it's that important. Let's be real, for, you know, Joe Blow up the road, who's doing this after college hours on the side, or, you know, looking for a quick couple $100 from a bug bounty, you might be only getting a couple $100 worth of research. So there is big incentives if you're really dedicated to fixing bugs of providing that bug bounty, which hopefully gets you a researcher that gives you something that's actually worthwhile.
Thinking through the way these interactions go, it sounds like there's a lot of back and forth and discussion between that. Would it be unusual in these kinds of interactions for the threats of legal action to come up?
Ooh, so that's a hot topic for sure. And actually, that's probably why some of those bug bounty companies exist, is because there is, you know, I've only got so many fingers, and I could probably go past my fingers and past my toes on the number of times that I know security researchers have reported a bug 100% along the lines of just altruistically, I want to share and make the community better, and then get slapped with a legal report or some type of communication, or sometimes it's just flat out like threat of a lawsuit. You can imagine me as a security researcher, I don't tolerate that very well. I think that's, that's the approach of your mother or your father's company. That's not the 2020 approach. And to be honest, it probably hasn't been the approach since 2010.
So it definitely would be unusual to have that kind of response.
It's, in my opinion, inappropriate, but sadly, I wouldn't say it's too unusual. Okay. There's some companies that still haven't worked through it. They just haven't got their PR, haven't got the team. And that's why so many companies now outsource their bug bounty programs, because these could turn into PR disasters. When you try to come after a security researcher, like, there's no right answer when a security researcher delivers you a bug, other than tell me all you can, or, you know, as one wise gentleman once told me, thank you, may I have another?
I know where that came from. But my last question on this is, if you're thinking about these kinds of discussions, what are the kinds of things that might make the interaction between a researcher and the company contentious? Are there typical things that become contentious?
I think about this as very similar to how I've kind of, grown up, getting into my late 30s, figuring things out. And I've learned that if I assume positive intent, most of the time I'm not getting burnt. Even if somebody has like some ulterior motive, like generally that positive intent goes really darn far, because usually someone's trying to help you. Don't get me wrong. I've totally seen, there was a security researcher named Weave who actually tried shorting AT&T stock, and he went to jail for his vulnerability. He had no positive intent. Not a good guy. But generally speaking, most people that are reporting these bugs, they're not doing it to shame, but you could imagine it does kind of hurt a little bit. Like, that's having somebody say like, your kid's ugly. Nobody wants to hear your kid's ugly, but that's kind of what they're doing. They're telling you your baby's ugly. Bugs happen. To me, it's way more important if, when a bug happens, how do you respond to it? Are you like, oh man, Kyle, you're looking after me. I totally appreciate this. Let's get you in contact with the right person. I'm going to make sure good communication happens. An engineer is going to work with you. We're going to get this fixed together. Maybe you're even asking my thoughts on what could actually be done. Hook me up with a little bit of cash for my time, if it's, you know, useful and not a waste of your time. Like, that's really positive. Those are the best experiences. But the ones that make the news about bug bounties, Those are companies who tried to sweep the bug under the rug, didn't acknowledge it for 90 plus days, didn't quite understand it, maybe misassumed. That sometimes happens where somebody says, oh, this is prioritized as low. The 90 days goes by and they think that they're sitting on a low priority bug. Then the proof of concept comes out, or you know, somebody actually shows them how to use the proof of concept. That's a real problem. Sometimes the engineering team doesn't know how to use. And you can imagine how that goes. That gets contentious real quick.
So there's a lot of reasons that could go bad that are like from a malintention, but there are ways where miscommunication brings it up too. So it's worth understanding why it went contentious.
I've almost completely ruled out the thought that somebody is going to like, I mean, even to the point when stuff like this happens, I generally believe like you can't be too transparent to the point that you accept like an exorbitant amount of liability. You still got to be a business, whether you're a small business, medium business. You got to make sure you're taking care of the livelihood of your employees. You got to make sure you're also doing the right thing, right? Which is, hey, we had a bug. I'm super sorry. Let me demonstrate how we're not going to have this again. That's going to convert people all day. That's going to evangelize people all day. Sweeping under the rug in 2020 is almost a recipe for like disaster on Twitter or Reddit.
To all the people that are consumers of software, the people thinking about that are watching this back, what would your one piece of advice for them to think about as they're trying to understand what's going on from a security perspective? What should they be looking for?
Oh, you know, I remember my mom yelling at me a lot of like, you need to understand there's two sides of every story. Sometimes we at Huntress actually get called in to be that middle layer of like validation. And it's not something we do. We have a little bit of trust in the community. And so you could imagine when the vendor is seeing a bug, they're seeing it through one color lens, right? Maybe it's the blue lens and everything looks blue. And it could be the vulnerability researcher that's looking at through his or her rose colored lens. And together, they really just need somebody to help them see purple, right? Work together on that side of the house. It's that mediation that happens in between. If you can get that, whether through a middle party, trusted party, if not, you really got to be flexible and you got to be humble and you got to be willing to agree to disagree sometimes too.
Thanks for listening to this bonus episode of The Business of Tech.